good afternoon. It's right about 3 o'clock. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Friday, the 24th of October, the 2014. Jeff Ramke here on a Juneau afternoon. So you will find out about tonight's evening Egan Forum with filmmaker Yolanda Cruz. Fairbanks artist Lucas Elliott will talk about his workshop developing characters for graphic novels. We'll find out about Monday's local candidate for statewide office forum with our guest Pat Watt. Comedians Nick West and Morgan Jay will be here with a preview of their shows at Suite 907 this weekend. And we'll learn about Saturday's zombie run with a benefit for Harbor Triathlon Club. The forecast for tonight, numerous rain showers, low temperatures around 39 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, decreasing clouds. Sunday, increasing clouds.
From the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Anchorage, Alaska, I'm Emily Schwenk. The 48th annual AFN convention got underway with remarks from Alaska leaders, including Governor Sean Parnell. He touched on the theme of this year's convention, Rise as One.
The way we rise as one is by holding on to our values, caring for our loved ones, and standing up for what is good, for what is right.
The governor talked about issues of domestic violence and improving education for children in rural Alaska. Following his remarks, Parnell signed a bill making 20 Alaska Native languages official languages of the state. He's held off from signing that bill since last May. Bernadette Yayuk Alvana Stimpful of Nome attended the bill signing.
And that means the English speakers are now even with the UPEP speakers.
Because of a U.S. District Court ruling, this will be the first year in history UPIC and Gwich'in speakers will be able to vote in their native languages. AFN President Julie Kitka applauded the historic change to the state's voting materials, but she says there's still more work to be done with respect to Alaska Native voting rights.
We're going to continue the work on national legislation. We're going to continue regulatory things with the Department of Justice. In Juneau, we're hopeful that the new legislature and the new administration, whoever is elected in governor, will set up a bipartisan commission to revisit the rules on elections and update them and make them more modern and more inclusive of all the people in our state.
Kitka chided Governor Parnell, arguing his administration and those before him have tried to assert state rights over activities on federal lands and Alaska Native subsistence for nearly two decades.
We began this year under attack. Governor Sean Parnell and his administration decided to appeal the state of Alaska versus Sally Jewell, or the Katie John case, to the U.S. Supreme Court. The governor and his legal team were trying to overturn Native victories at the lower courts and shift the balance between the federal and state governments over management of subsistence on federal and public lands.
The U.S. Supreme Court rejected Alaska's petition and upheld lower court rulings. Kitka called the rejection a victory. She says AFN has plans to work with resource managers in the state and at the federal level in the coming years.
We have asked the White House in the administrative to use the full power of the President of the United States to issue an executive order mandating federal, tribal, and co-management of fish and wildlife on federal public lands, for the Secretaries of Interior and Agriculture to issue secretarial orders doing the same, and calling for a major co-management demonstration project right now.
United States Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack was at the convention. He says the Department of Agriculture was unaware of the depth of problems regarding subsistence access and food security.
What I can tell you is that we're continually looking for ways in which we can be more responsive to the unique circumstances up here. Part of the challenge is making sure people have access, and if they don't have access, creating the opportunities for the locally harvested items to be available and to be used.
Those that came to the conference also listened to a presentation about the effects of violence on Native children and issues regarding juvenile justice. Valerie Davidson is the Senior Director of Legal and Intergovernmental Affairs at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. She spoke about a series of hearings held across the nation recently.
What we heard consistently in Alaska, if you really want to help, get out of the way. Stop making it so hard for us to protect our kids.
Davidson says tribes should be sovereign, and resources that protect children and families should be more widely available. A report compiled from testimony gathered from the hearings she spoke about is due out in November. There are still 2 days left to the AFN convention. In coming days, attendees will hear from Alaska's gubernatorial and U.S. Senate candidates. They'll also hear a report from the state legislature's Bush Caucus. The convention continues through Saturday night. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Emily Schwing.
AFN Newscast produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding provided by South Central Foundation, ConocoPhillips, Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, Donlin Gold, the Rasmussen Foundation, Shalista Corporation, and Manalip Association, Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guest is Yolanda Cruz. She's a filmmaker. She's tonight's presenter at the 7 o'clock evening meeting presentation at the University of Alaska Southeast. She's done 7 documentaries on indigenous people in the United States and Mexico, and she's our first guest in the studio. Yolanda, thank you very much for being in the studio today.
Hi, thank you, Jeff. It's really nice to be here in Juneau afternoon. Thank you for hosting me.
So you're a filmmaker. What got you interested in filmmaking to start with?
Well, I found it, I like stories and I liked people. So, and then I wanted to write, but I was found it to be very lonely. Then I decided to combine my passions, photography and writing. And then I started doing documentaries. And so I, people enjoy watching them. So then I thought I should become a filmmaker.
What kind of process do you go through when you're trying to figure out what to do a documentary on?
Well, I think one has to start with something, a story that one is passionate about, and then I find that what people have done on the subject, and then a lot of the subjects that I find that I work on is on indigenous lives, contemporary stories, and I don't find a lot of stories, so then I propose stories and then see which one people like, and then I get funding for it, and then I produce a film.
You've done 7 documentaries. What have they been on?
They have been on, a couple of them have been on immigration, on the immigration of indigenous, Mexican indigenous, because I think a lot of the, when we look at immigration, we just look at the Mexicans or people from South America, and then I am from a community in Oaxaca, Chatinos is the name of my tribe, and then my experience has been meeting other indigenous people who live here, and I lived for a long time in Washington State, so then I covered that lives, and then part of it is organizing art, social activism.
What kind of process do you go through when you're, once you made the decision to do a documentary, you get funding for it, and how do you do your research?
Well, I first do the research because in order to get funding, my funding a lot of the times comes from open calls from the public TV station and from different foundations that are specific for documentaries. So then in order to get those grants, you have to go through a process of writing a treatment and then submitting that. But it's almost... you have to do research in order to write a good treatment and a good proposal to ask people to invest in your film. So then that's the beginning of the process of making, initiating the production, pre-production of a film. And then once I have the funding, which is usually a couple of months, a year, up to a year, then I, by the time I get the funding, I already know more or less which people are going to tell me which story. And then I, by this time, I've been in touch with them through all along. And then I set up time for an interview, and then I set up time for do archival footage on them. And then, well, that's when it comes to documentary filmmaking. And then when it's fiction, it's writing a script.
So you're working on a fiction script now.
Yes, I am in pre-production of my next film, which is it's going to be a feature-length fiction film, and it's a drama comedy. It's different from documentary, but it's also set in Mexico. And then I wrote the script, and then I had the fortune of attending Sundance Screenwriters Lab and Directing Lab, and then I optioned the script, and now I have a producer who is looking for the money for the film to be made. So in documentary, I usually, once I done the initial production of interviewing people and finding the subjects of my film, then I have to edit and I continue to look for funding to finish it. And then once it's done, I need to do the community outreach, which is, this is a film, the one that we're screening tonight. I finished this in 2008, and I'm very happy that a couple of years later, I'm still screening the film, and very happy that the Juno World Affairs Council invited me in the University of Alaska of Southeast hosting me, because this film, it's very personal, I think. It's the last film, it's the last documentary I produced, and since then I've been working on narrative films.
How long have you been making films?
I've been making films now for 14 years.
What kind of things do you know now that you wish somebody had told you 14 years ago?
To be patient, to enjoy, you know, the process of making the film, because now, and to be humble, because I remember just being so, now I just turned 40, but when I was 30, my ego was very big, and it was like, it was getting hit really hard, and that was difficult for me when, you know, sometimes people would not understand my film, or my film would not be selected to have a big premiere. And now I am just grateful that I had the time to make those films, and that those films are out there. And that, I mean, like the example of this film, the 2501 Migrants that I'm screening tonight, that people are still interested in the story, and the story is still relevant. And but I, when I was making the film, I found it to be, I was very stressed because I was not sure whether it was what it was going to be, a film that it was going to live this long. But now it is, and now for that I am humble and grateful for it.
The title 2501 Migrants talks about a mass exodus.
Yes, the story is in this artist that had traveled the world as a plastic artist. He was a painter, and then he came back to his village after living a couple of years in France and making a living as a painter, which I think people who are artists know how hard that is. So then once you're making a living doing that, it means that you're established artist. And so I met him, and I think that we had something, we met in San Francisco, and we had something in common, that we both were from small villages and have migrated to look for education, to look for an education. And then now we both were wanted to say something about what was happening in our communities. And but his story was very unique, that he went back to his community after 10 years living abroad, and he was looking for all his friends, and he came back looking for, you know, his friends, and he couldn't find them. They all were in the U.S. And then he's like, well, he felt lonely, and he's like, what can I do? And the only thing he knew how to do was art. So he decided to create a statue for each person that had left the village. And in that case, the last number that he came out with were 2,500. And then 2,501, it was his story. So then the idea was that the clay statues would repopulate the village, and he won't be so lonely anymore.
I'm talking with Yolanda Cruz. She's a filmmaker, and that film 2501 is going to be shown tonight at the evening Egan presentation, which starts at 7 o'clock in the University of Alaska Southeast. Without giving anything away, Yolanda, what kind of conclusions did you draw connecting art with place?
What I found with this film is that art is a very good way to communicate with people, or some of the issues that we have in our communities, which is, I think all of it is the universal feeling of feeling at loss, of not having a home, of having to leave because of looking for a better life. But I think that people that enjoy art and we want to know more about Mexico, or about some of the feelings of what is happening in these lonely places, this film is a very good window to get into that. So, and I think that my conclusion is that art is a very important, it could be it's a universal sort of language where we can, across cultures, can have a dialogue.
Besides the film, what are you going to be discussing tonight?
I'm going to be discussing a little bit of art, which I really love because my past work has been more community activism, and I think that it's amazing to see how art can open up discussions, and I think that not discussions, but open up your heart. And I think that that's a lot of the times when I present the film, people want to know more about what we have to offer. Sometimes what people focus is that we just come here and take jobs away. And I think that also immigration it affects us back in our communities because we are losing our young people.
Yolanda, thank you very much for being on the show with me today. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, thank you, Jeff. I really enjoyed being here.
I'm 317, and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. November 4th, this election is coming right around the corner. If you want to be an informed voter, you want to take time to watch and listen to various forums that are going to be held in the capital city and beyond. With us in the studio are Pat West and Bridget Smith here to talk about Monday's taping of a forum. Bridget and Pat, thank you very much for being in the studio today.
It's good to be here, Jeff.
Yeah. It is. It's a busy week. Juneau Votes is a collaborative community project, and we work closely with K2 and the Empire, and it was founded by the League of Women Voters and the Library of the City, and we've got a whole lot of community partners, including the Chamber of Commerce and the Native groups and high school teachers, just to try to get the word out as much as possible for voters to learn what's coming and go to vote.
Yeah. The big impetus for this, Jeff, was the last year's municipal election. The level of voter turnout was about 19%. And so it was sort of a wake-up call, I think, to people. And so this group came together in order to increase voter turnout through voter education. Things like forums and articles and things like this, and to collaborate with as many nonpartisan organizations as possible in Juneau. And what I wanted to say is that this year in our municipal election that we just had in October, we've gone up to 29%, which is great. It's about a 10% increase now.
Actually, it's 50% if you take 19% 2 years ago, and it went up half of that again.
So it's really was, and, you know, it was due to, because there was a lot of competition on the ballot, there was the swimming pool, so there were things like that. But we should tell you what's happening this week.
Please do.
Yeah. Beginning tomorrow, in at 360 here in the K2 building Monday, from noon to 1 p.m., there is a state election forum for the candidates for the state Senate and the House of Delegates. And then next Wednesday and Thursday from Anchorage, Alaska Public Media is broadcasting debates for governor, lieutenant governor, and House and Senate seats statewide. Wednesday from 7 to 9 is the governor and lieutenant governor debates. And Thursday from 7 to 9 is House and Senate candidates. And then on Friday on 360 North at 8 o'clock, you can see the Judge Carpinetti talking about the judicial selection process, because this year on the ballot, people vote for judges. And then lastly, on Saturday, there's a big Get Out the Native Vote event at Tlingit Haida Community Council Building between noon and 2. So there's a lot of interest in trying to get people informed and to the polls.
Mm-hmm. The program about the judicial system is going to be on KTOO News on Monday night at 7 o'clock for the radio listeners. And on Tuesday is the Local Candidates Forum, broadcast of that forum, which is going to be on Monday. It's going to be broadcast on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. And then Wednesday and Thursday, the forums from Anchorage are taking place live on KTOO News and also on 360 North Television.
Yeah, there's a lot happening.
What do you think accounts for the lack of voter interest? Even though 29% is not Wisconsin.
No, it's not very good. Well, people are busy, and people don't pay a lot of attention to local elections. The turnout is always much more in a presidential year, and then it kind of falls off on the 2 years in between where the Congress and the federal Congress and the Senate. And then the municipal elections are in the off years, and for some people, for some reason, people get pretty confused about what they're voting on for this year. For instance, there was an election, primary election in August. There's a municipal election in October. There's a general election in November. And, you know, people kind of say, well, I don't understand what's happening. Why can't we do it all at once? And they kind of tune out. And they are busy, too.
You know, I also think there are other reasons, too. League of Women Voters has consistently been registering voters in high schools, at UAS, at all of the events in town. And some people say to us, I'm not a political person. And I think that probably there's a profound disconnect in people's minds about what elected officials do and how it actually affects people's personal lives. And that's part of the reason that we try to educate voters as to the fact that it's very important who our elected representatives are, because they do make laws that do affect our lives.
Once again, the taping of the Local Candidate Forum is happening this Monday night at noon, or Monday afternoon at noon.
Right.
Here in the K.
Yeah. Here at K2 and at 360.
I've been talking to Pat Watt and Bridget Smith about Juneau Votes. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Well, people may be confused about where to go, how to get their polling place, what's going to be on the ballot. And the State Election Division of Elections website is a terrific resource. And that, if you're on the Internet, you just go to elections.alaska.gov, and you can find out everything that you might want to know. And there are also going to be 3 ballot measures. This time there's the legalization of marijuana, there's the increase in the minimum wage, and then there's the Bristol Bay Initiative, which has to do with protecting the fisheries. And there's a lot of information on the Division of Elections webpage about those two, those three. But also you can go to Ballotopedia and Project Vote Smart. Those are 2 websites that have tons of information on these types of initiatives, and you can see what's happening in other states that have similar measures.
And one more thing, Jeff. Early voting started Monday. Right. And so it doesn't matter if you're going to be in town or not on Election Day. You may choose to vote early. And the polling place is set up at Mendenhall Mall at the far end near Safeway, and also downtown at the in the state office building. It's a very convenient thing to do to vote early.
All right, Pam and Bridget, thank you so much for being in the studio today.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 24th of October, 2014. It was on this day, 1929, the stock market crashed in this country. The day became known as Black Thursday. By the following Tuesday, the market had lost almost $26 billion of value. Banks failed. Individual investors lost their savings. The Great Depression began. It's the birthday of the playwright Moss Hart, New York City, 1904. His first hit play was Once in a Lifetime, went on to write The Man Who Came to Dinner, My Fair Lady, Camelot. His best-known play, You Can't Take It With You, about the Sycamore family, eccentrics whose home is full of snakes, ballet dancers, Russian royalty, candy, and fireworks. Still one of the most popular plays for amateur productions. It's the birthday of the writer and explorer Alexandre David Neal, born in Saint-Mandé, France, in 1868. Traveled by herself when she was just a teenager, including a bike trip across Spain. When she was 21, she used her inheritance to go to Sri Lanka. She was very interested in Buddhism, and so she disguised herself as a Tibetan woman and got into the kingdom of Tibet, got into the city of Lhasa, which at the time was off limits to foreigners. She became fluent in the Tibetan language. She met the Dalai Lama. She practiced meditation and yoga, hiked through the Himalayas. She once saved herself in a snowstorm with a meditation that increases body temperature. Became a Lama in Tibet when she was 52. Her most famous book was Magic and Mystery in Tibet. It came out in 1929. She died 40 years later, 1969, at the age of 101, a few months after she had renewed her passport. And it was on this day in 1861 the transcontinental telegraph system was completed, and people could send messages quickly from one coast to the other. The insulators and wires were made out east and had to be shipped to California all the way around the southern tip of South America. There was no Panama Canal as yet. But it was finished, and the first message was sent from California to President Lincoln, assuring him that California supported the Union in the Civil War. Here's a poem for today by Jim Harrison, entitled Fence Line Tree. There's a single tree at the fence line here in Montana, a little like a tree in the sand hills of Nebraska, which may be miles away. When I cross the unfertile pasture strewn with rocks and the holes of gophers, badgers, coyotes, and the rattlesnake den, 1,000 killed in a decade because they don't mix well with dogs and children, in an hour's walking and reach the tree, I find it oppressive. Likely it's as old as I am, withstanding its isolation, all gnarled and twisted from its battle with weather. I sit against it until we merge, and when I return home in the cold, windy twilight, I feel I've been gone for years. Fence Line Tree, Jim Harrison, from his collection Saving Daylight, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation,
offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:30, and you are tuning to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are Nick West, Morgan Jay, and Angela Katas. Here is part of the Comedy Weekend at Suite 907 this weekend. Thank you very much for being in the studio.
Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Yes.
So what's so funny?
You know, everything is so funny, you know? This is so funny.
How do you take something that's serious or funny and adapt it as a humorous style, perhaps your own style?
Why don't you take that one, Nick? You want to start it out?
These are really deep intellectual questions.
We get paid extra for asking the deeper questions.
Yeah
I get it. Just find out what frustrates you, you know, and then you interpret it in a way that's funny. I don't know. Like, what's funny? You can't put your finger on what's funny. You know what I mean? Like, it's very elusive.
It's like, everybody here has thoughts, you know? Like, you have thoughts, Jeff, and I'm sure the listeners have thoughts.
Yeah.
Angelo, to my left, has thoughts.
I literally have never thought once in my life, but...
Angelo, tell them what's funny.
Well, this one thing that's pretty funny is when pigeons and the ravens interact with one another at McDonald's over French fries.
Mm. Okay. So take that for example. You know, Angelo saw some birds fighting over some French fries at a McDonald's, and some of us...
Using words.
Yeah, people would say, hey, look at these pigeons, look at these birds fighting. But then we would take it a step further and say, why is that funny? And then we maybe put it in a different context.
And then I would put my finger on it. I would literally touch it.
Well, you know, you put your...
So you can put your finger on funny after all.
Metaphorically.
Can you teach somebody to be funny?
I would say yes, you can. Technically, you can. I think some people have like a funny bone in them, you know?
I disagree, Jeff.
You disagree with me?
But can I disagree?
Yeah.
With Morgan?
You could disagree with me.
You cost extra.
Yeah.
I think it's something, like for me, a lot of my friends, I feel like something we were born with, you know, like, it's not like Angelo's just going to be all of a sudden funny, like he's been funny since he's a kid, you know?
Well, actually, the only reason why I'm funny is because I steal other people's jokes. Like, without other people, I would just be another talking voice, but... I'm not sure if I'm funny or if other people are funny, but I'm just the translator.
I'd just like to take this time to point out the opinions expressed by Angelo does not particularly represent the opinions of myself or other people.
So, Nick, you grew up in Los Angeles, in Juneau, and moved down to Los Angeles.
Yeah, I'm from Douglas.
And Morgan?
I grew up in the East Coast of New Jersey. I was in New York City doing stand-up for about 7 years, and then I've been in L.A. for about 2.5 years. Yeah.
You do stand-up in comedy clubs?
Yeah, comedy clubs, colleges, I mean, anywhere really. You know, I run a couple of secret shows in Los Angeles, you know, that don't take place in comedy clubs that are a lot of fun, you know. I actually like doing comedy. I don't know how you feel about doing comedy in venues that aren't comedy clubs. You know, I always think it's really interesting, like art galleries or rooftops or even people's homes or basements or something like that.
How do you work in a comedy club when nobody's in a funny mood?
Oh, man. Ugh, it's tough.
That must have happened to you a couple of times.
I think you just have to go in there and you just have to do your jokes, you know. You just go in there. You got to know that it's not about you. It's about them, you know.
If anyone's coming to the show tonight, just get yourself in a funny mood. Just do what you can, whatever it takes. Nobody come if you're not in a funny mood.
Listen,
I don't want anyone in the crowd
that's
not
wanna do.
In a funny mood.
Right. So if you want to get yourself in a funny mood, I want you to go home, and before you come out, I want you to look yourself in the mirror, and then I want you to look yourself in the eyes, and I want you to shimmy your shoulders. Shimmy your shoulders real hard and real fast. And you're going to be in a goofy mood.
What kind of things do you fit in your act, Nick?
I talk about life, you know, experience. My work, it frustrates me, so I'd like to express that frustration.
Yeah.
In a funny way, you know, if they're in a funny mood or not.
Morgan?
Recently, I've been writing a lot of comedy songs. So writing songs about dating. I'm writing the song about video games right now. It's very deep work, you know. But anything really, you know, anything that pops up, again, if you have a thought, you take it a step further and say, why is that funny, you know?
Angela, how about you?
Well, since the time I was born, I was half Tlingit and half white.
Mm.
And I'm going to go up on stage tonight and talk about how awesome that is.
Okay, yeah. There you go. And also a good place to draw material from is things that you love and things that you hate, you know? Because anything that comes from, like, passion, you know, can lend to good jokes. What do you think about that?
Go on. Elaborate.
You know, like, I love chicken nuggets. You know, I love Wendy's chicken nuggets.
What do you hate?
I hate traffic, you know?
Now put that into a joke.
Okay, here we go. I got an extra nugget, and it was awesome, so I did a little song and dance about it. I was in traffic. I don't really have a joke about traffic yet, but I'll write one eventually.
We're not doing improv. We already have this planned out.
Yeah, we have jokes written, so.
Is it enough to have funny material, or do you have to put some kind of drama or some kind of acting into it?
Oh, yeah, there's not, if you're just a good writer, like, you can't just, like, all of a sudden be a great stand-up. Like, there's some people that are more, like, writer-based, I feel like, and then there's some people that are more performance-based, and then when they can combine those, if you can perform at the level of your writing, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's two different things coming together, you know?
I mean, they always talk about having delivery, having timing, and having your material, right, like, three aspects. So sometimes in people, some of those are stronger than others, you know. So, me, I know I'm like a better performer than I am writer.
Yeah, and I'm a better writer than I'm a performer.
Yeah.
And I just do it all really, really well.
There you go.
It's not fair though, because he's half Tlingit. I'm only like a 16th.
What time does the show start tonight?
Starts at 9:00.
9 post meridian. At Sweet 907.
Angela, did you get to talk enough? Do you want to say some stuff?
I would like to first of all give a shout out to all my haters.
Sure.
They're listening. I'm up here. You're down there. Second of all, I'd like to say that I'm partying with the original king of comedy. Don't you have a little bit of background in comedy, if you don't mind me asking?
Don't be shy, Jeff.
I've seen you on some commercials now, funny guy.
Bullwinkles?
We did our research. Did you do your research?
I think there is someone on stage once or twice at Centennial Hall.
The person that you're talking about has refused to be identified.
Oh, no. Hey, Jeff. This place is going to be surrounded in no time.
Hey, Jeff, how do you make something funny?
You probably juxtapose it with something serious.
There you go.
See, you already knew, man. You're asking questions, you already know the answers.
You're
killing
it.
It's like Jeopardy. Yeah.
So I was watching my YouTube, and I saw you guys performing outside of Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. You just got back from the Laughlin Comedy Festival.
Oh, yeah, that was in Nevada.
Yeah, that's
Laughlin,
cool.
Nevada.
Yeah.
Tell me about it, please.
Huh?
Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, there's a lot of old people in Laughlin. Like, a lot of old people. And I was surprised to see that many old people. But they did come out to my show. It wasn't exactly my demographic. It was Larry the Cable Guy people. But it was a fun time, you know? Good time.
Yeah.
Learned a lot about comedy. Hung out with comics.
Do you think there's a difference in what people think is funny in Los Angeles versus what they think is funny in Juneau or Laughlin?
Yeah, I do. But then again, there's some things that are just universal, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you could do topical stuff that'll work here that won't work there, you could do stuff that'll work there and won't work here. But, like, at the end of the day, it's just, like, one moment of connection, you know, if you can connect with the people.
Yeah, and ideally you want to write jokes that transcend, you know, race, age,
demographic.
Geographic location, you know. You want to be able to tell a joke that's going to be funny in New York City or in, you know, Kalamazoo, Michigan, or in, you know, Jacksonville, Florida, or in Juneau, Alaska, or in Sacramento, California, or in Phoenix, Arizona.
That's good.
Or in, you know, Paris, Texas, or
that's
in...
Is your material blue at all? What kind of audience is...
Dude, how do you think... You're not blue, bro. You're like far from blue,
I would
bro.
Say... Yeah, I don't think it's that blue. It's pretty positive. I do... I think I skirt the line between, you know, blue. I try to make material that everybody could like, you know. I'd say if an 11-year-old child came to my show, they'd probably think it's funny, but their parents would be like, you probably shouldn't hear this, you know.
Starts at 9 o'clock tonight at the Studio 907, which is the old Marlottini's.
Suite 907.
Above Donna's restaurant. Angela Cattas, Nick West, and Morgan Jay. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, this has been a lot of fun, and I hope everybody comes out to see it. I think they're going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Is there a cover charge?
There is a $10 cover charge.
But no dress code.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Programming on KTOO comes from George McGuan, candidate for House of Representatives in District 34 from Sunny Point to Berners Bay, paid for by McGuan for State House.
This is Bird Note. Gulls, to be sure, present a kind of Sunday crossword puzzle of bird identification. Their similar overall coloration of black, white, and gray, and plumages that change both with the seasons and a bird's age, can be mind-boggling. Gulls are a year-round fixture of coastal waters and many locales in the interior of the continent. Yet despite what may seem an unchanging picture, major shifts take place each year in local gull concentrations. Relatively few gull species are common nesters in the lower 48, but in October, both the variety and number of gulls increase dramatically. Gulls that nested in Alaska or Canada fly south to spend winter in more temperate climates. Along the west coast, petite dove-like mew gulls, which made the Alaskan tundra their summer home, now mix with the locals. In the east, millions of herring gulls and small numbers of Iceland gulls spread out along the coast. In fact, 15 or more gull species regularly turn up in total along our coasts, making October and late fall an ideal time to learn to identify gulls. Can't solve the puzzle? Visit birdnode.org for tips on how to tell which gull is which.
Time is 3:45 and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau. In the studio with me now are Lucas Elliott and Pat Race. Lucas is doing a workshop tomorrow on building character as far as the graphic arts novel is concerned, and Pat Race works for Lucid Reverie and is one of the funny guys in town. Pat and Lucas, thank you very much for being on the station today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, sir.
So most recently, you've been working on Moose. You want to describe what Moose is?
Sure, not a problem. So Moose is actually going to be a graphic novel that I'm working on with Chad Carpenter, the gentleman who draws Tundra Comics. It's going to be the companion graphic novel for the movie that he's currently working on.
What are the tools of the trade as far as the graphic arts world go?
It's a little bit of everything. For myself, I work digitally, so I use a Wacom tablet. It's a digital tablet that I draw on, and Photoshop. So it's just kind of, it's all worked on with the computer.
What's inspired you?
A little bit of everything. Real life. I've been a avid comic and cartoon watcher since I was itty bitty. So that's been everything from Nickelodeon, Disney, Marvel Comics, everything's been really influential in all my work.
You have a little bit of a Celtic bend to some of your stuff, too.
That's true. So my wife's family is Scottish. They're from Homer, but they're all Scottish. And my family has a really heavy Celtic influence as well. So I thought that having that inspired into my work, being in Alaska for 18 years, would have a nice blend.
You started out being an illustrator, and then you moved into the graphic arts world. What prompted the change, or was it just a natural evolution?
Mostly a natural evolution. When I was in school, I was a traditional illustrator. I was a painter. Once I got out of school, I always knew I wanted to get into graphic arts, comics, children's books, graphic design for T-shirts and posters and whatnot, and I just started going with it.
How does Alaska affect your work?
Well, the Alaskan market is very unique. We like what we like, and being up here in general, I mean, just the landscapes, the creatures, they're so diverse and just inspiring that you can't just help but create from that.
What do you think the biggest stumbling block is for people who are trying to learn the art?
That's a good question. The biggest stumbling block, I think, would have to be just the persistence of it. A lot of people, they get caught up on trying to create something that's perfect, and art is not perfect. You just have to kind of go with the flow, and whatever comes from that will be your creation.
Do you rehearse your creations?
All the time. I sketch constantly. Even all my final pieces, I will sketch them afterwards just because I always think of something that I could do better.
Doing a workshop tomorrow at 1:15 in the Douglas Library. What's it all about? Who should go?
So tomorrow at the Douglas Library, I'm going to be teaching a character design workshop, and that's going to be for anyone and everyone. I mean, if you have a story or if you just have a thought of a personal character that you've always wanted to just figure out how to draw but you didn't really know how to, it's just going to be a step-by-step of the creation of characters.
Is it easy?
I've been doing it for more years than I can remember. It is easy to a certain extent, but it does take persistence. It's all about that growth.
And I should mention we're having a reception for Lucas over at the Alaska Robotics Gallery from 4:30 to 6. If anyone wants to come down, he brought a bunch of prints, and his work has been on the wall there since First Friday. So you've probably seen it if you've been in there recently.
You say you work with a tablet.
Yes, sir.
How do you think that affects your work compared to the old-fashioned way of pen and ink?
Well, it's working on a tablet tends to be a little more forgiving because you're not working on a hard line. You're able to actually go back and tweak your line work, your colors, a little bit easier than you would with traditional media, where you would have to either try to scrape away what you were working on or just work over it. So it also kind of creates a different feel to the work.
That forgiveness in being able to go back and fix your work is sometimes a trap, though. I've found at least you can get it's so easy to go back and change things that you can get lost in the minutia of like, oh, this should be 3 pixels to the left. Yeah.
Very much so. I've definitely gotten in that myself. The great with tablets, you can actually zoom into a tiny little portion and create such intricate detail. But as Pat said, you know, there is that problem of becoming a little over-obsessed with what you're trying to do. With working in traditional media where you are forced to learn to draw and paint and know what marks you're putting down, you become a little more proficient about what you're actually trying to create. So both have their pros and their cons.
Your workshop tomorrow starts at 1:15 in the Douglas Library. Who's it for? Beginners, advanced, everybody in the world?
Well, I'm gonna say mostly beginners. I'm gonna be covering stuff for everyone. So, if you have any kind of drawing talent and you just want to learn a little bit more, that's probably the best. If you're just starting out, we'll do what we can. I want to accept everyone to be able to learn how to draw.
Yeah, it's always fun to get together and just draw with people too.
So. Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
They need to bring anything.
Nope, everything will be covered. If you want to bring a sketchbook just so you have your own personal sketchbook with you, you can, but the library and I, we've been working on it. We've got paper, pencils, Sharpies, lots of Sharpies. So it's going to be a good time.
Is there a cost?
Nope. No, it's absolutely free. Just show up.
All right. Thanks very much for being in the studio with us today. Lucas Elliott and Pat Race talking about tomorrow's workshop and building characters as far as graphic arts go. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Come to the reception. We're going to have some cheese at 4:30.
It'll be good.
You tell the boss in the shop I need a couple of weeks, cause the freezer's empty and I need some meat. I'm going up the river where the trees are tall to catch a moose or have a ball. If you want to catch a moose, you got to get up early. If you want to catch a moose, you got to get up early. If you want to catch a moose, you got to get up early. You got to get up early if you want to catch a moose. You take a wooden boat and a 70 horse and a couple of drums of gas. Of course, you pack lots of food and your old wall tent, your leaky boots and the oars that are bended. If you want to catch a moose, you got to get up early. If you want to catch a moose, you got to get up early. If you want to catch a moose, you got to get up early. You got to get up early if you want to catch a moose. Is it rather do my hunting at the grocery store?
Support for programming on this station is provided by Dennis Egan, candidate for the Alaska State Senate in Juneau, Skagway, Haines, Gustavus, and Northern Southeast Alaska communities. Paid for by Dennis Egan for Senate.
Time is 3:54, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. In the studio with us now, we have Zach Stinson and William here to talk about Saturday's Zombie Run. Thanks for being in the studio with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Jeff.
So, William, what is a zombie?
A scary... come from the dead creature that used to be a human.
Are you going to be a zombie for Halloween?
No, I'm just going to be dressing up as a zombie tomorrow and be chasing.
This is a zombie run. It's a fundraiser for the Harborview Triathlon Club. Zach, you want to talk about the club, please?
Yeah, sure. The club, this is our third year with the Triathlon Club, and basically kids swim, run, and bike during the spring of the school year. 4 days a week they train, and it's mostly just to get some extra exercise in their days, but also they train to go compete in a triathlon in Sitka in the spring.
And the zombie run is tomorrow at Sandy Beach. It starts at 9:30 with registration and 10 o'clock at the race. What kind of route are you going to travel?
So it's the run is a 5K, and the way the run works is basically as the kids run a 5K, and it's not just kids, it's adults. This is our third year of doing it. Everybody gets three flags to start with, and when they get their flags, they run the course, they run the 5K, and as they're running, the kids will come out and they're dressed up as zombies, and they try to take the flags from the kids or the adults that are running. And if somebody loses all their flags on the run, then at the end of the run they get a little bandana that says they've turned into a zombie. But if they keep all their flags, even if they keep just one flag, then at the end of the run they get a little bandana that says they survived.
William, do you think people run faster if they're being chased by a zombie?
Yes. I've seen kids run a lot more faster during the zombie run and do a lot more jumps and twists and hiding in the bushes. And they hide themselves in the bushes so the zombies don't see them. And they, like, run past the zombies by doing that. And they try to stay in the middle of the group or just go away from the group as fast as they can.
What advice would you give people who are trying to avoid a zombie?
To just either twist, do a twist in the air, if a zombie's trying to get you, or go run into the woods and then curve around them.
Tomorrow at 9:30, be there to register, and then 10 o'clock, be there to watch out for zombies.
Yeah, that's right. 10 o'clock is when we start a one-mile run for the little kids, and then at 10:30 is when we start the 5K for the bigger kids and the adults. Registration's at 9:30, though.
All right, Zach Stinson and William, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Just it looks like it could be a nice day for it, so it's been a lot of fun every year that we've done it, so come on and join us if you have time.
All right, thanks, William.
So tomorrow, show up if you can. It's a fundraiser for the Triathlon Club for us to make it to Sitka, and that's all.
When your world is trouble, everything goes wrong. When you're waiting for something, and it's taking too long. When you're in a hurry, everybody going slow. You're going crazy, don't know which way to go.
Time is 3:58, and you are tuning in to KTMO News in Juneau. We have Monday at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Scott Burton will be your host and talk with Jim Hale about his November writing workshop. We'll learn about Wednesday's Juneau Economic Plan town meeting. Bobby Jones will be here to highlight the upcoming Ghost Walk. That writer's romantic bird note music and more next Monday at 3 on a Juneau afternoon.
Somebody, I know it's there for you.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276.